Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Emily Tampkin, U.S. editor, and you're listening to World Review from the New Statesman, a twice-weekly international news podcast. Every Thursday, we come together to unpack some of the most significant stories in world affairs, and every Monday, we interview a guest for their unique perspective and expertise. Today, I'm speaking to Samir Sarhan. Samir is the president of the Observer Research Foundation, a think tank based in New Delhi, India. It is no secret that Joe Biden and the United States has made more emphatic outreach to India, in part to counter China. But how is this perceived in New Delhi? We'll speak with Samir to find out.
Emily, I think you can assess this in a number of ways. The first, of course, is it's a confirmation of what some of us were discussing over the last few years. There seems to be a broader American consensus on their assessment of China. Many of us were beginning to sense that it had changed, and it was bipartisan in character, that new assessment. So that could be one assessment. The second, of course, could be that the security establishment in DC was determined to make sure that whoever came to power would follow their advice on their engagement with China. And the third assessment could be that the Chinese are leaving no American president too much room to maneuver. It is the Chinese who are shaping American policy to Beijing, and in many ways also deciding international relations in the Indo-Pacific. In some ways, all of us are responding to the muscular emergence of China in the recent past, and that could be the third assessment.
I think historically in India, there has been, at least in some corners, both a sense that the Americans are not trustworthy, reliable partners, and also, relatedly, that the Americans are going to get India into a military conflict that India does not want to be involved in. As the U.S. Really delves into or focuses on the Indo-Pacific, and is there still that fear, that wariness, or have current events and Chinese behavior made those concerns secondary?
I think much of what you sometimes may hear in Delhi or in D.C., could possibly be remnants of the 20th century. People holding on to positions of the past, people who have written books on India's behavior or American attitudes of the past, wanting to still be relevant in the 21st century. I think there is a more pragmatic assessment of each other today. We know that we don't share a typical Atlantic-style relationship. It's a more Asian relationship, more grays than black and whites in our relationship. But certainly, it's a modern-day, contemporary Indo-Pacific partnership, which is not going to be a typical alliance or a treaty alliance. It is going to be far more a partnership which is very specific in what it seeks to achieve. I'm not saying that we trust the Americans all the time. For example, I think any Indian establishment would be very wary of trusting America vis-a-vis its role in Afghanistan and Pakistan and some other parts of the world. But we are far more certain of them in some other geographies. So I think it is a more real relationship. We are not blindly believing in each other, but we are certainly more sure of each other than we ever were. And I believe this is going to get stronger.
There are a couple of potential pitfalls to this relationship that I want to ask you about. But first, I do want to ask, since you mentioned Afghanistan, how the withdrawal was perceived.
Well, those who believe DC is untrustworthy had a flag there. And those who believe that DC is responding to its pragmatic realities assessed it in that manner. So I think it was a divided public sphere. or the strategic sphere in New Delhi. To me, I think Americans had to leave. Could they have left better? I think all of us would agree, yes. It was a bit of a messy withdrawal. I don't think any amount of spin can change that. We could have done better and we could have been consulted. But having said that, I think perhaps the Afghan track always saw America maintain a certain distance from India. And be it Trump or Biden, I think that was true in both the terms, presidential terms. And in that sense, it's not surprising. It's not that we've been let down or heartbroken because America did not consult us. I don't think they ever were very, very open with us on what they were wanting to do.
What do you think of the tone that President Biden and Vice President Harris have taken toward Modi and to other Indian officials so far? Has it been appropriate? Have they not raised enough concerns? Have they been too condescending?
You know, I think both our countries are mature enough to appreciate that we have domestic constituencies who listen to us even as we engage in foreign policy. And I think most of us would agree that there has hardly been an interruption despite the change of presidencies. I sense the importance of each other, and the warmth in the bilateral remains largely similar.
So the other, not elephant, but let's call it bear in the room, is Russia. It does not actually seem to me that the close India-Russia relationship is proving an impediment to the U.S.-India relationship, despite concerns in a variety of corners that it would, right? It sort of seems that the U.S. has decided to appreciate the fact that India has this other relationship. And India has clearly not let its relationship with Russia stop it from becoming closer to Washington. But what is your read on this part of the issue?
Russia punches far above its weight in terms of global affairs, be it the Middle East, be it Afghanistan, be it even the Indo-Pacific in the future. Russia is going to remain a relevant voice. And we do not want a situation where we paint Putin into the Chinese corner. I think that would be disastrous for us. So we will have to find ways in which we can accommodate Russia's role in the world in our scheme of things. Now, I think India has a role to play there. We have established over the last decade and a half, with our American partners, that our relationship with them is independent of what we do with Russia. I think that is now visible to all in DC. We have not let that come in the way of being more bold, more ambitious, more forward-looking with our American partners. And I think that should give us a space to perhaps now get into a more nuanced conversation with America to ensure that we allow Putin the room to maneuver when he deals with Xi. Now, I think a stronger Russia-India relationship, a growing Indian market for Russian exports, economic partnership with Russia, between Russia and India, and a growing economic partnership between Europe and America would allow Putin not to become too fixated on Beijing as the resolution for his challenges. And I think that's an opportunity as well. We need to have that conversation.
Wherever you are in the world,
if you're interested in global affairs,
you can subscribe to The New Statesman on digital, in print, or both for as little as £1 a week at newstatesman.com/subscribe.
That's just $2 a week in America.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
India has long been at one of the earliest and loudest voices speaking about the need to take substantive action toward climate change. Is there a sense in Delhi that the United States is not carrying its weight on this issue?
We were actually quite proud of being the global trade union on climate debates. We were the global opposition leader. We don't want an agreement unless you do X, Y, Z. We will not move forward unless you give us X, Y, Z. You know, we have been strong proponents of justice, equity, and action by rich countries. And I don't think that is going to disappear. But even as we do that, India has built a market case for its own green transitions. And if you see the exponential growth in our renewable energy installations in India and our ambitions to reach a very large share of our future power landscape through renewables, tells you that there is an economic case, a market case, an entrepreneurial case, and a recognition that our economic growth, jobs, and our future development trajectory would be served by going green. So I think from the US, India would look to one big partnership possibility, and that would be to work together and create a new framework that would catalyze trillions of dollars of green capital to flow into green projects. And we are not talking about aid or grant. We are talking about commercial capital from banks, from funds, from instruments. We are talking about creating a whole new green financial ecosystem that can cater to what people suggest is the $2 to $3 trillion green capital requirement of India in this coming decade. And that could also reach some of the other emerging geographies that desperately need infrastructure investments and development capital. So I think that is one big area where India and US can partner.
I think there might be some who look at India's rhetoric on climate change and on current levels of pollution in India and say, well, wait a minute, like there's a gap here. And I don't think anybody in India would deny that there is a gap between where you want to go and where you are. How does that gap close?
The gap closes like it was closed in New York and London. By more advanced, cleaner, greener systems. So, you know, we are going to have to go through that decade of pain, and we could shorten the period by accelerating our transitions. And that acceleration is dependent on the financial flows we are able to attract to move into these cleaner and greener projects. And that will allow us to retire some of our very high emitting industries and energy plants.
Last question for you. So you and I last saw each other over a year and a half ago when I had to flee ORF in Delhi because to get back to Washington because of the pandemic, which I don't think either of us thought would still be ongoing. It is. What do you think either for India and the US and relations between the two or for India itself has been learned in that time because of the pandemic?
I think we all need to understand that we were unprepared. And all our theoretical planning went for a toss when we were faced with a systemic risk unleashing itself on our societies. And therefore, we need to go back to the drawing board. That's the first lesson, that we don't know how to respond to a global crisis. The second lesson is that if climate change is going to unleash far bigger forces, then, you know, we should act now. I think that's as a follow-up to the first lesson. On New Delhi, I think for us, there were two shades which were quite visible in our experience with the pandemic so far. The first, of course, was the heartening display of state capacity. The diplomatic architecture that we have built up over the years, all of that came into play. The big aircrafts carrying oxygen cylinders across the world as we needed it or as someone else sought it. You saw that large capacity, but we also saw important need to invest in the state capabilities. Once we get the oxygen cylinder to our shores, can we take it to the bed in the hospital? And I think it also taught, certainly India, but I think many parts of the world, the need to invest in certain specific kind of infrastructure that is more human-centric. While we were able to create the shock and awe of big movements of material and equipment, many of us still need to invest in the last mile infrastructure that serves the individual. So an individual first infrastructure plan for the future becomes something that we need to think about. And guess what? It is absolutely consistent with the sustainable development goals that we all want to achieve and consistent with the green transitions that we are embarking on. So the new infrastructure and SDGs should ensure that we place the human well-being at the heart of it. And I think that's the main lesson from the pandemic so far. But like you said, it's not over yet.
I think any conversation on the US and India that brings it back to the human is it's a fitting end to end with a call for humility, action, and to focus on humanity. So I will leave it there. Sunir Saran, thank you again.
Thank you, Emily, and stay well.
This has been The World Review from The New Statesman. You can read all our international coverage on newstatesman.com. And if you are a listener of this podcast, which you are, you're listening, or a subscriber to our World Review newsletter, please take our survey. It's at newstatesman.com/worldsurvey. That's one word, world survey. We are expanding our international coverage, and we want our readers and listeners' views. So please do take our podcast and newsletter survey. If you've enjoyed this episode, please tell a friend or even an enemy and rate us and leave a nice review. Our producer has been Adrian Bradley. The team will be back on Thursday. I'm Emily Tamkin. Thank you for listening, and until next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.